Hello.
Hello.
Okay. I'm sitting here with Gloria Olness. She's associate professor at the North Texas
University of North Texas.
University of North Texas. Nice to talk to you.
It's a pleasure.
You're one of the keynote speakers of this conference, and you have been doing much research in narrative.
Yes.
Not always with people with aphasia, but you started out with normal populations.
Yeah, people with no aphasia.
Right.
Because we're all, as human beings, storytellers. We tell stories day in and day out.
Yes, yes.
In everyday conversation.
Right, right. You've always been fascinated by storytelling.
Yeah, for some strange reason.
Why? Why? Can you elaborate on that?
I think I had some good mentors who highlighted for me the importance of narration in everyday life, and Hanna Olatowska is one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's through learning from mentors and then people around me, and then reflecting on what they've taught me and observing it in everyday life, that I become convinced, based on other people's thinking, of the importance of telling stories in your self-identity and also in bonding with other people.
Right. And your fascination with aphasia, you know when that started?
It started when I was in graduate school, and I was actually in my first mentor was in child language disorders. Her name is Judith Johnston.
Mm-hmm.
And as an undergraduate, she really inspired me to be involved in the field of speech-language pathology. When I went to graduate school, my master's thesis was actually in child language, or the language of Down syndrome, and I was mentored by people in child language. But the turning point was when I had my first aphasia class, and then went to work for 9 months at the VA hospital with a guy named Jay Rosenbeck, who's an aphasiologist, and I haven't looked back since. I have always been fascinated and committed to these populations of adults with aphasia. I think that there's a totally different dynamic with adults, especially adults who are motivated to communicate about who they are to other people, and that's something you don't necessarily have when you're working with pediatric populations. So, yeah.
So you'll think that people with aphasia, they are good storytellers? They can be good storytellers?
Absolutely, because they're human beings.
Yes.
Right? So they have stories to tell, and sometimes they're in situations where the context doesn't necessarily allow them the opportunity, because the person they're with is so focused on their aphasia and not on their humanity. And so it's a combination of working with not only the person with aphasia to self-advocate and self-express, but also to work with the people and places in their context to find ways and opportunities for them to be themselves and be human beings and tell stories from their own lives, like we do in every single conversation every day, all of us.
So you could say that people with aphasia, they are good storytellers, but they lack an audience.
Yes, they always have a story to tell because they're human beings, and we find ways to adapt context and confidence and impairment levels and participation so that opportunity returns. Barbara Shadden's done a lot of really good work in the importance of narration and identity, and we're addressing their humanity when we work with them in narration.
Yes.
Yeah.
You are at this conference now. You were invited because it's about interaction and discourse and action.
Yeah.
Is this the first time for you to come to this conference?
I came first in 2016. I was on sabbatical, and I was visiting several collaborators, Jackie Stark in Vienna, and people at University in Groningen, and on that, and several other places during that sabbatical semester. And during that time, when I was here, Rolien Bastian you're going to be in town, why don't you stop through? So I submitted a poster, and it was my first introduction to the dynamic that happens here with the students. There's a heavy student emphasis and a lot of supportive students and new ideas. Mm-hmm. So I came and participated as a poster presenter that year. Mm-hmm. And so this is my second time.
Yes.
And both times it's been on the Lido.
Yes, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. You know the environment now. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me something about your current research? Because this morning you were talking about the importance of prominence instead of just focusing on reference in stories or communication with aphasia, with aphasic people.
So I think it's important to build off of the most fundamental and long-standing models of narration that are narration in monologue, elicited monologue that we're also familiar with. But in addition to building on that basic science, to conduct more basic science that's theoretically grounded, and then also to take that basic understanding from our scientific enterprise and apply it to this to scientific application to the clinic. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of the work I do tries to look at the fundamentals, mm-hmm. In a basic way, and this is but then also apply that. And yes, I think historically aphasiology is focused on conveying to other people, transmitting information, the who, what, where, and when, through lexicon and morphosyntax and all these ways of conveying information from one head to the next head. But actually, it's not so much getting every last piece of information across to the person you're talking with, but rather what points you choose based on your attitude, your opinion, or emotion about that narration are the most important points for you, for the person you're talking to, for that place and that time. Mm-hmm. And so our stories, we may tell the same story multiple times, and Neil Norick has done a lot of excellent work in looking at stories told and retold and told in different contexts. And each time it's tailored, it takes pieces of that person's attitude, opinion, emotion, their stance about that event, and tailors it to the person they're talking to, and tailors it to the context, and tailors it to the topic, like Marion Lehman talks about, right? And tailors it to fit in that place at that time. And if they tell that same story in a different place and time, it'll have totally different points of prominence to it. And it's really that point making that we're doing in conversation, and not the information of transmission like we would do in a court of law. I mean, I feel sometimes like when we're in our clinical sessions, we're making sure that they convey every last piece of information, but we don't live in a court of law. We're not giving testimony, especially for something that the other person already knows. Rather, we're conveying what our attitude, opinion, or emotion is about that thing we're narrating and how it fits to the current conversation. So I think sometimes, I do think sometimes that we have it backwards, that actually the reason for opening our mouth in the first place is to convey the point about what it is we're saying, and not to convey the thing that we're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
So like the essence of communication is like sharing perspective.
Your personal stance on the thing that you're choosing to talk about at that time.
Yes. In order to
convey a piece of yourself and your ideas, and to have those ideas resonate and be related to by the person you're talking to.
Yes. To bond. Or to position yourself.
It can be intrapersonal. I can be telling a story to make sense of it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be interpersonal, to bond and to have that person confirm that they've gotten the point, and then maybe share their point, their related point to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so stories are not about conveying that who, what, where, and when like we do in a court of law. Stories are about conveying of ourselves and conveying of our own take, our own stance on that event as it relates to that person, that conversation, that time and place, that topic of conversation.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. So what would you consider to be like the biggest loss in aphasia for someone who is confronted with aphasia and their relatives?
Like Barbara Shadden, I think, really talks about this loss of identity, this loss of being able to convey your identity and your stance and your take and your attitude, opinion, emotion about things. And I think it's that, that's the loss. It's the loss of who you are and your, and your, the opportunity to be able to convey who you are, whether it's to make sense for yourself of who you are and your life circumstances, or to convey that to other people. When that opportunity is lost and the humanity is shadowed underneath the aphasia, then yeah, that's the biggest loss. There's, do you know Tom Broussard?
Yes.
Have you seen Tom Broussard's?
Yeah.
So he just had a post recently talking about who he is and how aphasia can shadow overcast who you are just because of the aphasia.
Yeah.
And that people don't, that anytime someone meets you, the first thing they might want to talk about is your aphasia, but that's not you.
Right. Yeah.
And so
it's stigmatizing.
It's stigmatizing in a way, yeah?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's,
so what you're saying is telling a story, storytelling, using language is just as important for conveying your own identity to someone else as it is to confirm your own identity to yourself.
Yes.
It's both ways.
Yeah, intrapersonal and interpersonal.
Yes.
Absolutely. And there's, you know, the whole long literature of these functions, like Barbara Shadden's work and Barbara Johnstone's work and,
And so, what do you consider your future directions of your own research? What would you like aphasiology to go, which direction it should take? What is your ideal?
For me, it's, for me, the ideal is to have people together in collaboration to advance the science for the betterment of life for people with aphasia.
Mm-hmm.
That it's no one person who's going to do it, that it takes a careful understanding of the contributions of all the people who are committed to these lines of research and communication and collaboration among them to make the strongest and most robust advances possible. The minute we start siphoning, you know, putting ourselves in silos and separating ourselves and not communicating is the second that we've lost the very advancements that are so called for. And I would include in there that the people with aphasia and the family members need to be involved in that process of designing the very research that we're doing.
Yes.
I think advocacy and advocacy groups like Aphasia Access and Aphasia United and the excellent Tavistock Trust who are funding these important efforts and promoting them are, they're doing it right because they're seeing what may impact, maximally impact the lives of people with aphasia. And I think those collaborations are essential for that. So, no one person or one group or one has any answers.
Yes, so collaboration is important and also connecting to people with aphasia and learning from their experience.
Yes.
Yes.
And if I had a dream, right, the one that we're trying to build on ever so slowly, this is this one inspired by Aphasia Access, where researchers and clinicians, people with aphasia, family members, and even members of the community who know nothing about aphasia team together to become one in making life in their local communities, life better for the people with aphasia who are there. So that would include not only the scientific enterprise, but also support structures and community advocacy and self-advocacy by people with aphasia in communities. So the Aphasia Collaborative that we're working to develop, and you have the mission statement for that, is inspired by this notion of coming together as groups of people with a commitment to bettering the lives and the life participation of people who have aphasia in any and every way possible in this joint effort.
So you would support a network like AphasiaNet?
Yes, and
very much.
AphasiaNet, I have to say a special thank you to the people affiliated with AphasiaNet. Back when we were just even earlier in the process of trying to figure out what the Aphasia Collaborative in Dallas-Fort Worth would be like, I was inspired in talking with Rimke Gronewald, who was a communication specialist working with and for AphasiaNet. And AphasiaNet, she met with AphasiaNet, and the leadership agreed to their sharing their development materials with me. It's in Dutch, we're translating it and using it because we having models of successful development of networks is very helpful in creating networks in other places in the world. So yeah, I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much for this interview.
Yes, and thank you for being the interviewer.
Yes.
You've been ever so gracious and kind.
Okay.
Thanks.